You're listening to a Tiger Hall podcast. For more interviews with many of the world's most inspiring business leaders, uploaded daily, download Tiger Hall from the App Store or Google Play. I'm sure you don't need Tiger Hall to tell you that there's a link between diversity and performance. But why is this? How does diversity lead to higher performing teams? Well, joining us, armed with knowledge, research, statistics, is Heidi Anderson, partner and founder of Living Institute, a diversity-centered management consulting company and author of Diversity Intelligence, How to Create a Culture of Inclusion for Your Business. Here's our conversation. Okay, Heidi, can you share any especially interesting or relevant research as to how and why diversity leads to higher performing teams?
There is a lot of research out there showing why. And one of my favorite studies is actually the one from CloverPop, which says that diverse teams make better decisions in up to 80% of the time. And it's a super interesting study because they've been tracking great decisions made at a certain point in companies. And then they studied how the decisions were made and who was in the room when they were made. And then they could see simply that whenever there was a high degree of diversity, that could be age, gender, geographical diversity, they would kind of win over other groups where there were perhaps only gender and age diversity or just gender diversity. So whenever you had a high degree of diversity, they would outperform the other teams in their decision-making processes.
But why is that?
Yeah, it's actually, then you have to go to Catherine W. Phillips, who was a professor. She made a super interesting study showing that once you know that you are going to a meeting, let's say tomorrow, and you know that there will be people different from you in the room, they may have a different educational background or gender or cultural background and so on. You know that they probably also will think differently from you and make decisions, different decisions than the ones you would make per default. So what she found out, Catherine W. Phillips, was that people prepared better for the meetings they were going to have when they knew there was a high degree of diversity in the room. They knew that they would have to have better arguments. They would have to reason better. And they would also expect some resistance in the room, right? Because if people are different from you, they may not think like you and they may not agree with you on everything. So actually, the people in that room would be better prepared for the decision they were going to make.
I suppose that makes sense, right? If you sort of know that you're a homogenous group and everyone thinks like you, you sort of go, oh, yes, this meeting will be easy. Everyone wants to agree.
That's exactly what the study shows, right? That when we call it also when a group is very homogenous and has been working together for years and years, they have what we call sameness thinking. They'll just, hey, let's do what we did last year. It worked. So we'll just repeat the past again and again. And we all think the same way.
Yeah.
And that's in a volatile, uncertain world like the one we face now and the companies face now. We cannot use the same tools or the same thinking as we could 10 years ago or 20 even. That's basically what happens when teams are diverse.
What, Heidi, is most often misunderstood about diversity and high performance?
What we see when we are working with our clients all over the world, we see them all saying, we want diversity and we want to measure that we have, for example, 50-50 gender balance by 2025 or something like that. And then they go through a lot of processes, hiring more women, for example, if that's the case. But what they're not aware of is that if there is a culture that would make the women, for example, leave the company in large numbers after a short period of employment, they have wasted a lot of time and a lot of money on hiring these women or attracting them, recruiting them. So what we constantly say to our clients is Diversity without inclusion is a terrible idea.
Okay, so if you hire for diversity, but you're not thinking about inclusion, what's the psychology behind it going wrong?
Well, it is, if you hire diverse people and you have the majority groups and minority groups and privilege blindness and unconscious bias, and the culture is basically based on very masculine values, but you're trying to hire people who are very different from that majority group, you could say, of men in leadership positions and so on and so forth, then people will leave the company. The people belonging to the minority groups will, we can see from all our inclusion surveys and perception gap analysis, when we ask why, how long do you plan to stay in this company? We can see that the minority groups don't plan to stay there very long. There's also our studies, but also other studies showing that, for example, if you want to hire millennials, which is a very good idea because the future kind of belongs to millennials, and then ask them, what are the odds for you staying at this company beyond 5 years? And we can see that only 27% would stay beyond 5 years in a company with no diversity or very little diversity. But they would stay beyond 5 years in 69% of the cases here. What we see millennials do, or young people do when they are looking for their future workplaces, is they check if there are groups that are different from themselves. Because what characterizes millennials is that they want to work with people who are different from themselves. And if they see a very homogenous group of employees and leaders, they are simply not interested in working there. Another example is one that's very recent for me, because today I'm having a meeting with a big investment fund, and it's our second meeting. And in our first meeting, the CEO told me that they have an all-male executive committee in this investment fund. And all of a sudden, there were six males in that ex-com. One was leaving, so they would have the chance to hire a female. There was simply a seat free or available. He said to his colleagues that they should all bring in two female candidates for this one seat. So there were 10 women, right, that they talked to. And then he told us that the first five women simply said no when he called them in the first call. Three of them wanted to have a cup of coffee, or the other five, sorry, wanted to have a cup of coffee and talk it over. And after that first meeting, three of them would say, no, we're not interested. So there were two left now. And they went in and had the second cup of coffee. And after that meeting, they said that they didn't want to work in the company. So he could not attract any of these 10 women. And then he said to us, if I ask 100 men, all of them would say yes. So what it's telling us is that these women that he was talking to had a feeling that this culture would not be a nice place for me to work. This would be perhaps a very masculine culture. And sometimes when we hear stories from companies like that, women often say that it's a toxic culture and they feel excluded when they join the companies. So in a way, when I'm having a meeting with him later today, I'll say, well, you were lucky they said no before you hired them, because alternatively, they would have said yes and you would have lost them anyway. So it's sad somehow for the companies themselves that they are experiencing this.
Yeah, that's pretty major. But it's true though, isn't it, Heidi, that some brands tend to, I mean, really generalizing, some brands tend to attract more women, some brands tend to attract more men. Some companies will find they have more applications from different segments of people. What can those companies do to try and keep a level playing field on the diversity front?
What they can do is to make sure that their recruitment processes are bias-free, as bias-free as they can become. Mm. because unconscious bias is playing a big role in our recruitment processes, you could say. Both when you make the job ads, there can be a lot of hidden signals to women or men that this is a great place for you to work, right? So both looking at the wording, what they are actually looking for, what they're saying they're looking for, and so on. And then throughout the process, you can make sure that you anonymize the candidates, and so that nobody knows whether it's a man or a woman that's applying for the job. And then you can make sure that only the most qualified move on to a job interview by making the recruitment task-based, so that you give them a task, all the candidates a task, and the ones who solve it best, they go to the job interviews. And then you should prepare the panel for who is actually stepping in to the room. It might be somebody who looks completely different from what you are used to or what you expected. So keep an open mind when the door opens and the candidate comes in.
But even, Heidi, even if you do all of those things, so say, I don't know, a beauty magazine or a cosmetics company, even if they did blind recruiting, they would probably have a lot more applicants from women. So even if they took the names off all CVs and they didn't know who was behind them, chances are a lot of people that walked into the room in the end would be women.
No. No, we did a beautiful project or helped an organization that was actually a beauty company, one of a very big French company. And they had this problem. They couldn't recruit men to their Nordic offices. So what we did was to make a bias-free recruitment process. But we started also with looking at the job ads, saying, how can we make them interesting for people with a masculine mindset, if you can kind of stereotype in that direction, and you can, actually. So how can you make it attractive for men to apply for the jobs? And within, I think it took us 2 years to get a 50-50 pool of new hires. So it worked.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, that's great to know that it worked. Okay, perhaps just one final question on this topic for you. So in what real ways does diversity lead to high performance for anyone still in any doubt? And what can leaders do as well to really ensure that this is happening in their teams and in their companies?
First of all, they should base it on data, not on thought that it might help the company. It might be a good idea. Instead of that, they should look into what's actually going on with companies that have a high degree of diversity and inclusion and what's going on in companies that don't. And they don't have to do deep research because it has been done for them already. And one of the signs of which way the wind is blowing at the moment is the CEO of Goldman Sachs, David Solomon, who at World Economic Forum 2 years ago said that Goldman Sachs will no longer list companies unless they had at least two women on the board. And the question is, why on earth would David Solomon, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, come up with that idea? Of course, it was based on data. It was based on what happened with companies they listed over the last, I think, 9 years. They could see that the companies with diverse board members, they saw a 54% jump in their average share price within the first year of going public, whereas those companies with no diversity at all only had a 13% increase. So it went down from 44% to 13%. And it's so much money, and that it would simply make no sense for Goldman Sachs anymore to list those companies.
Is there a danger, though, that in doing that, some companies may sort of rush things and place women on the board that they wouldn't have maybe done so otherwise, just because they need women on the board?
I'm sure they would. We know they would. And it's okay, because we can also see now that for example, in Norway, there has been a legislation saying that you must have, I think it's 40 or 30% of the underrepresented gender on the boards. And in the beginning, when and I think it's almost 10 years ago now, everybody was, you know, saying that it's a terrible idea and quotas and these women will be the token in the board and not really being there because they were smart or qualified. And they weren't. I think some of them weren't because the company simply had to find women who could be on their boards. But the magic happened anyway. So just mixing the board members gender-wise or having both men and women on board actually made a positive difference anyway. So where we are now is that you can actually say, as long as it's somebody who is different from the majority and this person is fairly qualified, you will still get the benefits of diversity in the team.
Okay, thank you so much, Heidi.